Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. The Purdys have served this valley's insurance needs for decades. They find you the right insurance that fits what you need, and they do so at the right price. And if there's a claim, customer service kicks into gear and high gear. They act as if it happened to them. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Dennis Chambers in a moment. First of all, our play-by-play call of the day. Yesterday, Coors Field, Nolan Arenado hits for the cycle and does so with an exclamation point.
Melanson's pitch. Drive to left field. Going back is Slater. It's gone! A cycle for the ages. A team that is special.
Jack Corrigan with a call on KOA in Denver yesterday as the Rockies, who are a really good team this year. And Arenado, by the way, has been a heck of a player for several seasons. They're playing really well right now. Let's bring in Dennis Chambers from BasketballInsiders.com. Dennis, welcome. It's really great to have you with us on the show today. Hello, Dennis.
Hello?
How are you today? Hi, Dennis.
Hey. Hey, Steve. How are you? Thanks for having me on, my man.
It's great to have you on the show. Let's start with this. The Fultz trade right off the top. Let's get to that because in the end we know the Sixers will take him. What does that do to the balance of the Sixers on the floor with Simmons and Embiid?
I think bringing Markelle Fultz into the fold for this upcoming season is an absolute slam dunk move for the Philadelphia 76ers. It's the absolute best decision they could have made in trading up to get him. I mean, he is not only the best player available, but he's also the biggest position of need for the Sixers, which is a scoring guard, a combo guard, a guy that, you know, can light it up from the floor and play off the ball when they expect Ben Simmons to, you know, be the de facto point guard and dominate, bringing up the ball for, you know, 30, 40 times a game. So bringing Markelle Fultz in the fold, he really just adds floor spacing to the 76ers team that they didn't have last year, which, you know, again, opens it up on the block for somebody like Embiid, who naturally is going to dominate and, you know, command double teams. So with his passing ability to kick it out to Fultz on the perimeter, I think, you know, you're going to see a different aspect of the Sixers' offense coming into this season.
This is what I find so intriguing about the trade, is that they didn't duplicate a position by doing this. They actually added a position of need, because that's not what Embiid does. It's not what Simmons does. He brings actually different skills to the table the Sixers don't have.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and this was for the better part of the last year, the Sixers have really targeted this guy as their guy, the best fit for their team, as well as the best player available. So when they didn't, you know, land the first overall pick in the draft lottery, Brian Colangelo had said just, you know, a short time ago during the press conference that they had been on the phone with the Celtics trying to maneuver their way to the top, because they knew this was their guy. This is the guy they wanted to bring in. He was really going to help the team open up floor spacing and really, you know, take this process to the next level and start to see some results, maybe to start to win some basketball games.
What's interesting about Fultz is a lot of people haven't seen him, Dennis, because, number one, he's playing on the West Coast, so his games are on late. Number two, Washington was not very good last season, so they didn't garner any attention. When you've watched him, what do you like about him?
Well, I've watched Markelle for just over 2 years now, from his, you know, senior year in high school, his AAU circuits. He is... you know, very much a fluid guard. He's not going to do anything that's really explosive in maybe the form of like De'Aaron Fox would. He's very much a savvy type of shifter. And, I hate to use a comparison like this because, you know, you never want to put too much pressure on a kid. But when you watch him play, just from his measurables and how he maneuvers himself to get to the basket in a shifty type manner, he looks a lot like James Harden out there. So this is the type of player that the Sixers are bringing in, a very fluid, a very, you know, herky-jerky type of kid who can get past defenders and really shake his way to the basket as well as, you know, light it up from the outside.
Any concern at all that he was a great player on a team that, you know, he didn't help them win? Ben Simmons didn't help LSU win. Is there any concern because of that in either way? Because, you know, as you know, this is like the Jared Goff question because he had a losing record at Cal. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, for me, I think that stuff's overstated. I mean, just the summer right before he went into college, he played in the FIBA U18 tournament with Team USA. He was the tournament MVP. They won gold. He dominated from all facets. You know, he averaged over 23 points a game. He had 9 assists. I mean, you know, he... saying and trying to put him into the mold that he's not a winner, that Ben's not a winner, that stuff's blown out of proportion. It's hard for an 18-year-old kid to step onto a college campus and adapt the college lifestyle and then shoulder the load of an entire basketball team and an entire basketball program and really propel them to you know, a lot of wins. And both those guys didn't go to the typical blue blood programs. Ben was at LSU. Markell was at Washington for their specific reasons. So I think that stuff's overstated. And if you just sit down and you talk to both those kids and you really try to pick their brain, they're winners. They want to win. They know how to win. They've won all their lives. I really don't have any concern about that.
The outstanding Dennis Chambers from BasketballInsiders.com joining us on the show. Dennis, now give us some value. Where do you see some value in some picks here, especially in the first 10 that really intrigue you?
In the first 10, I think if we're just going to go right down to the Celtics as the other part of this trade, the Celtics dropped down to number 3, and they, you know, have valued guys like Jason Tatum and Josh Jackson in the same realm as Markelle Fultz, you know, from right. their evaluation standpoint. So they're getting picks, they're dropping down a couple picks, and they're opening up money to sign a guy like Gordon Hayward, or that'll be their plan. In free agency, now they have a near max contract to offer as a result of dropping down in the draft. So they get a guy maybe like a Josh Jackson who they're trying to work out tomorrow, or a Jason Tatum who they just saw. And, you know, when it's all said and done, either of those players have a shot to be the best player in this draft. So I think for Boston's standpoint, this is a rare scenario where it was a win-win trade for both of the teams if it really pans out. And I think, you know, they have a great opportunity to get some value. And then I think, you know, as you look a little farther down, a team like the Orlando Magic, you know, sitting there at 6, they're going to have the opportunity to bring in somebody maybe like a Dennis Smith or maybe like a Malik Monk or Frank Ntilikina, whoever they decide is their guy, and really add a nice piece to their already young core. And, you know, their management is going in a new direction with a couple of new hires they've had in the front office. So, you know, they're in a good position to add another one of those pieces after you get outside of the really, you know, 4 top-tier guys.
Dennis, I give you a choice. You and I are sitting in the GM's room. I give you a choice between De'Aaron Fox and Lonzo Ball. Who do you take?
De'Aaron Fox all day, and I don't question it. I think De'Aaron Fox is one of the most impressive prospects in this draft. He's got that defensive capability that you don't see from a lot of kids his age. I mean, he's gonna come in from day one and just really excel on the defensive end. He's got, you know, the length, he's got speed. He's one of the fastest guys coming out of the draft in the last couple of years. And, you know, in fact, in the beginning of the season, John Calipari even said that he was faster than John Wall, which is, you know, crazy to wrap your head around because John Wall is probably one of the fastest dudes in the league. So, I mean, that's what you're getting in De'Aaron Fox. And, you know, people have questioned his shooting ability from the outside, and then the way that the NBA is moving today, you need a guard that can shoot. But if you look at his form, if you look at how, you know, he performed in the back half of the season, he's 19 years old. Kids can learn how to shoot. They can learn how to better their shot. So his form's there. I think, you know, if he can develop that a little bit to become a little bit more efficient, a little more productive, you know, he's got just as good a chance as anybody to just be a great two-way guard in this league.
Dennis, I'm absolutely on the same page with you. I mean, I don't even think it really would be much of a choice in my room. I'd pick Fox right away. Ball does have some traits that are like Jason Kidd's, in my opinion. How do you view him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just picking De'Aaron Fox over Lonzo Ball isn't a slight to Lonzo. I think Lonzo's going to be a great player. He has the ability to find the open man that's uncanny for a 19-year-old. I mean, he sees the floor in almost the same ability that Ben does. He sees it a step or two ahead of everybody else. So he has, like you said, that Jason Kidd-type mold. But, you know, I just think what De'Aaron can bring on both sides on that capacity is really what pushes me, him ahead of me as opposed to Lonzo. But I think Lonzo has a shot at being a good player.
Yeah, no, I agree with that completely. I want to ask you, it was a slice of news that came out right around the NBA Finals was when Commissioner Adam Silver discussed, look, the one and done isn't working for anybody. So it's my sense that he thinks that, hey, maybe we ought to just go back to having high school players like Garnett and LeBron James and be allowed to enter the league out of high school. How do you view that?
I think that would be a great move for everybody involved. I mean, if you look at it, professional sports, you know, collegiate sports and professional sports, basketball, football, you know, the whole nine, and this is the only market in America where a kid's not allowed to leave high school and cash in on his ability to impact the market. They're told to go wait. In basketball, it's only a year. In football, it's three. So, you know, it's kind of, the way I view it, at least, is kind of unfair. I mean, how are you going to tell a kid, Ben Simmons is one of the perfect examples, because not every kid can leave high school and go cash in the NBA, but Ben would have been able to leave high school after his senior year, be drafted in the NBA, and, you know, contribute to an NBA team. But he had to go more or less waste his time at LSU. And if you look back at the reports, it wasn't that productive. I mean, he didn't do too well in the classroom. His sights were set on the NBA because that's where he knew he needed to be and where he wanted to be. So I think it's a little bit unfair that you have to tell a kid that he can't go make his money. He can't go make his living. Where a lot of these kids are coming from, you know, not the greatest backgrounds. Their families are in need of money. They need money. And the NCAA benefits off, you know, their likeness, their ability to win games and perform well. It just, to me at least, I don't think it's fair for the kids.
You know, I've changed my mind in this a couple of times, and I'm with you now. The last couple of years, I've been saying, you know, the heck with it. Let them go from high school into the league. College isn't for everybody, including the player.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, nobody, especially these kids that leave after a year, I mean, you can't force somebody in a classroom if they have a one-track mind. They know they're going for a year and they're looking to get out. And, you know, they risk injury. I mean, what if, you know, Ben or somebody else or one of these kids in the lottery this year would have torn their ACL their freshman season? That's money lost. Anybody else, any other market in America, you can leave high school and you can go determine your worth and try to get, you know, your pay. But in sports, for whatever reason, we decide that those kids don't have that opportunity. And to me, I just don't think that's fair.
Dennis, an absolute pleasure. I hope this is the first of many times we get a chance to talk. Thanks so much for the time you gave us today. It was terrific.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me on. I look forward to speaking to you again.
Dennis Chambers, BasketballInsiders.com. We'll come back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great having Dennis Chambers on from BasketballInsiders.com, who, by the way, has committed to sign the McCatrillo to Shikellamy petition. Fabulous. I mean, you got to be aggressive about these things. I mean, when you know what kind of opposition you're running into, you know. If I were mad, I'd start using Uber. All right. He's sitting in the studio. He says, I can't believe where we're going here.
I do have the app.
Good. You'll need it, believe me. I mean, I realize that the suit does not have what you'd call a stealth ability, but sometimes you get busy. Yeah. Didn't we have somebody else do those games last year? Yeah, Mike Ferlazzo did, yeah. Ah, he was good. Yeah. Can't stand you. All right. I know we got the sports bozo is coming up in about 10 minutes. And it deals with Clayton Kershaw, but it is not Clayton Kershaw. I don't know. There's certain elements in sport that do aggravate me, and one of them is we're about to talk about, where I don't mind that you do it, but if you take it too far and you're obsessive about it, you're a problem. We'll talk about the problem in about 10 minutes. I've talked about these Sixers and analytics. Sam Henke, who's and Matt Lee, I knew Matt was absolutely for what Sam Henke was doing because Matt's articulated that before. I think analytics absolutely have a place in every sport. There's several basketball analytics I can tell you right now. Here's one that a lot of fans don't realize that coaches can get their hands on. And one of them is which five players work best on the floor and which ones don't. They have analytics to figure out which five actually work best. So if I make a substitution or I sub in X to replace Y, there's a reason X meshes with the other four players still on the floor. Right? If I substitute Z for X, right, Z may not work with three of the other guys on the floor very well, but there's another combination he does work well with. Now, that's the kind of analytic that helps. That I think helps. You can never lose, as I mentioned before, that feel, that instinct. I remember, it trickles down, by the way, to every level of professional sports and college sports. In 2014, the State College Spikes minor league baseball team, good team. They ended up winning the championship. And Ollie Marmol, who's now the first base coach for the St. Louis Cardinals, they had a guy named Reyes. And Reyes, to me, was the quintessential 1-2 eight or nine hitter in the order. To me, that's what he was. You looked at him. He could move a runner. He had decent speed, not great. So, I mean, you could lead him off. You could hit him second. He handled the bat pretty well. Or if you wanted to get that second leadoff type of guy down at the bottom of the order to jumpstart at the top, you hit him eight or nine. Well, somebody in the Cardinals organization, not John Mozeliak, it was somebody else in the Cardinals organization who's no longer with them, said that the most valuable parts of the batting order are 2 and 6. So they wanted him to hit Reyes in the sixth spot. I looked at Ollie and said, Ollie, I said, visually, that doesn't make any sense. And he looked at me and he says, I do what I'm told. Right? You want a guy at the top that can run, create some havoc, get on base, so forth. You want a guy in the tool hole who can handle the bat. You know, if I need to move a runner, I can bunt. If I need to hit and run, I can hit and run. I can, you know, there's a variety of things that they can do. They're willing to do whatever. If the leadoff guy doubles, he'll hit the ball to the right side and get him to third. You need that guy. Then 3, 4, 5, and maybe even 6 of your power spots. especially 3, 4, and 5-year power spots. Analytics doesn't look at it that way. Analytics actually puts a damper on stolen bases. Doesn't mean as much. Are you watching what I'm watching here? I get the guy to second or get the guy to third. Doesn't it pay off for me? But they don't look at it that way. So, to me, I think I've always felt you had to be selective with analytics. I mentioned basketball. What do I value analytically to tell me a little bit of a story going into a game? What are points per possession offensively? What are your defensive points per possession? What percentage of points do you get from 2-point, 3-point, and the free throw line? Where does that distribution come from? Those are things that I look at. How many possessions per game? Do you play with pace? Do you slow the game down? Okay. In baseball, I really value on base percentage. I don't care how you get there. I don't care at all. As long as you get there. Now, for your contract, you need it to be a base hit. I'm not working on your contract. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key West 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I don't care whether it's personal insurance, business, commercial, whatever. They'll take care of you. They'll find you exactly the right insurance at exactly the price that fits your budget. And if there's a claim, they'll jump right in as if it happened to them. They are your partner in your insurance needs. Customer comes first. That's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. What a great group of professionals they are. Time now for the sports bozo of the day. He's made the cut before. He's back again. Zach Hample. You're saying Zach Hample? Zach Hample. He is the guy that last year, that game at Fort Bragg, remember that? Marlins and Braves? It was supposed to be invitation only. He got in. Remember that?
I do.
Yes. Well, he's back at it again. Zach Hample, a fan who claims to have collected over 9,000 baseballs at Major League Baseball games, said Clayton Kershaw rejected his request for a special Father's Day ball on Sunday. Hample, who attended Sunday's Dodgers-Reds game in Cincinnati, claimed in a series of tweets that he asked Kershaw for one of the Father's Day baseballs, only to be turned down by the ace pitcher. Tweet says as follows. Today I asked Clayton Kershaw if I could have a baseball. He said, no, you got 7,000 of them. Hashtag rejected. It was a blue Father's Day ball. I said it would mean so much to me. Said Kershaw was like, no, it wouldn't. Still love the guy. Okay. Hample is attempting to make a logical argument. Also jabbed at Kershaw, saying that the star left-hander's next paycheck shouldn't mean that all that much to him, right? He says, with that logic, Kershaw, you don't have to play it again. Sorry. You can take it out.
Matt's a big Ren and Stimpy fan.
I know.
Totally.
With that logic, Kershaw's next paycheck should mean that all that much to him, right? Hample, of course, made headlines in 2015 when he caught Alex Rodriguez's 3,000th hit, a home run, at Yankee Stadium, and then negotiated a compensation package from the Yankees in exchange for returning the ball to the now-retired slugger. As part of the agreement, the Yankees did donate $150,000 to a charity that Hample supports. Okay. Hample, who's 39, also drew the ire of the 82nd Airborne Division last year when he snuck into that game at Fort Bragg that was meant exclusively for military personnel. You know,
for everybody that's going to be manning the gates at Bowman Field for the...
Oh, he'll be there.
You think?
Sure, he'll try to get in. You know what? I don't mind people having their own hobby, whatever. But when it gets to be obsessive, like Kershaw looks at him like, no, I'm not giving you another one. Good. You know, if I have a choice between giving these 15 people right here autographs where they're just there for the sake of it, and you're out. It's how many signed Polo Malu jerseys can one person have in the house?
I got none.
I know somebody who does.
Right.
The former voice of Shikolomi football.
It's funny you talk about autographs. I saw someone in social media yesterday. He sent a tweet to now Fox NFL on Fox analyst Jimmy Johnson. He goes, what if I send you a Sazy, a self-addressed stamped envelope? I'd love to get an autograph. And he said, I'm sorry, I don't do that anymore. He did it one time, but he got 20 requests for one person, thinking he was going to market them and resell them. So he doesn't do it. So he doesn't do it anymore.
Well, no. I mean, I've talked to a couple of former players, and their concern is all the stuff up on eBay. I mean, I know it's a market, it's a business. I mean, but I just find the whole thing ridiculous. I mean, he's got 9,000 pieces of signed memorabilia. What in the heck do you do with 9,000 pieces of signed memorabilia? What do you do with it?
Other than stare at them or dust them to keep them clean.
I mean, obviously Kershaw has signed something for him before. So how many Clayton Kershaws do you need? I have none. I'm content.
Me too.
I don't... Sometimes at minor league games, I'll see people near either the dugouts or the runway, the entryway. They'll be sitting there with all these plastic holders with cards of all the players on the team. And, you know, and look, the minor league players are thrilled. I mean, that you're asking them to sign anything. So that's not an issue. But I always ask, every time I see it, I always ask myself why. I mean, obviously you roll the dice and along the way, and let's take an example. Going up to Williamsport and Freddie Galvis played for Williamsport. So did Cesar Hernandez. So did Andrew Knapp. Now they're with the big club. All right. You know, so I sort of see it. But, I mean, I watch this play out, and I'm thinking to myself, this is not something I would even think of or conceive of. Now, I don't care about such things, so that helps an attitude.
I did maybe 20 years ago, but it's not my cup of tea anymore either.
Yeah, I mean, I don't put star value in life either. Maybe it's just because of all the people I've been around over the years, where they just end up being people.
And in the end.
Right, they're people. But he snuck into, and he did get a baseball from that 82nd Airborne game, remember that?
Mm-hmm.
He got a baseball. It's for military personnel only.
mean, no offense, but I think one group I would not want to have ticked off at me is the 82nd Airborne. All right. Big hockey game coming in. It's only an exhibition game, but for fans here at Penn State, Pagula Ice Arena, you get the two-time defending Stanley Cup champion Pittsburgh Penguins against the Buffalo Sabres. That's kind of a cool thing on September 19th. Ben Jones, statecollege.com, joins us. Hi, Ben.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me.
With September 19th, the second ever NHL game at Pagula, but this time a little different twist to it. It's the Sabres coming in, but not the Minnesota Wild. It's the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a really cool event for Penn State and for the community. I mean, anytime that you get a team that just won a title into town, let alone a team that's, you know, well-loved by a lot of people here in town, you know, you've got to think, you know, they had all over 4,000 people showed up last year, and with that kind of crowd for two teams that frankly are not, you know, necessarily Pennsylvania favorites, to bring the Penguins in, you know, even if they're not playing all of their stars, which you have to figure in a preseason game, especially the first one, that might be the chance or might be the thing that happens. But, you know, certainly it's going to be a big event. You know, I'm a Flyers fan, and I'm going to have to swallow my pride a little bit and go and watch it myself. So certainly, you know, it's going to be a fun event for anybody who goes.
What was it like last year with Minnesota? You mentioned about 4,000 people there, and the World Cup of Hockey was going on last year. So you weren't going to get the Jack Eichels and players like that here. Did they kind of change the atmosphere a little bit because of that?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. I mean, obviously it's hockey, and you know, I think the crowd was just excited to see, you know, NHL-level players playing on the ice. I think everybody there, for the most part, was rooting for the Sabres just sort of out of that Terry Pegula loyalty. I'm not sure they'll get the same backing that they had last year this year with the Penguins in town. But, you know, there were guys like Evander Kane was there and Brian Gionta, and, you know, he's 38 years old now in his millionth year of playing in the NHL, was there. But, you know, I imagine that, you know, you're going to see a good, you know, sort of hockey-based, hockey-knowledgeable crowd showing up to see all these other guys. And it's a good chance, you know, for people who care about these two teams to see some of the younger guys that are in the system. And, you know, I went back and looked at the Penguins that played in the preseason last year because Malkin didn't play until the final game and Crosby was out at the beginning of the year with his injury. And you saw a lot of guys that by the time they had won the Stanley Cup, you know, guys that you didn't know were going to be as big of a part of their team, you know, a much bigger part at the end of the year than they were in the beginning. So you never know, you know, the guys that you saw in the Sabres and the Penguins and the Wild that ended up being much bigger role players that you can say, hey, I saw that guy play at Pagula a few months ago.
All right. A couple of other things along the way. Obviously, at this time of the year, Ben, what are a couple of things that you're trying to keep your eye on at this point? Because June is not normally one of the more active months of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to keep an eye on my golf swing most of the days. I mean, but it's been raining so much that's hard to do. But I think, you know, this is always a good time to kind of, you know, get up to speed with some of the guys on all the teams that are farther down the roster to kind of, you know, look at the year ahead. Because, you know, really, I think if you look at Penn State, you know, football season last year, that was so much about the guys coming up when other guys were injured and making plays that, you know, you really have to familiarize yourself with people that you don't think you're going to have to know, because really, you know, you're always an injury away from learning, you know, a second or third string linebacker's first name and you know, his birthplace and all of that. So I think June is really a good time, you know, to kind of get acclimated with all of those guys. That, like, we saw James Franklin the other day, and he said, you know, they're going on vacation. We should go on vacation. Recruiting's over, because pretty soon we're all going to be seeing each other a lot more and a lot more frequently. And he's right. So I think, you know, June is a slow time of year, but, you know, sooner rather than later, it's going to be Big Ten media days, and we're going to be riding the roller coaster all over again.
Give me an idea now for you. Let's go back a year. If we were doing this talk a year ago today, what would your thought process have been then, and what is it like now about the program?
Well, I think the biggest difference between now and last year is there are a lot more answers to questions that we had last year. You know, you didn't know, you know, you never heard anything bad about Trace McSorley, but you didn't know what kind of quarterback he was going to be. You didn't know that he was going to be a guy that could take, you know, heavy shots and just get back up and make plays down the field. You knew that Saquon Barkley was good, but you didn't know if he could do it again, because so often it's easy to have a breakout year. It's hard to repeat it. Now we know that. You know, there's guys on the defensive side of the ball that we didn't know a lot about. So I think it's really just, you know, it's a matter of, you know, we had a lot of questions last year going into Penn State season, and this year, you know, there are certainly questions that are going to be have to be answered. You know, can they replace Chris Godwin? Can they find a way to replace Brandon Bell? And, you know, those are the kinds of questions, you know, the teams are looking at across the country, but I think they're the ones that we look at this year. But certainly as a program, I think if you look at 12 months ago, the questions that we're asking are much broader and much bigger. And you look at the team this year, and it's much more of a housekeeping, much more of a depth, and just sort of the little details rather than big picture items.
Basketball-wise, the one thing that happens is there is, of course, a late signing period in basketball. So you've seen what Penn State was able to do in the late signing period. What do you think about the additions that they made to the roster in terms of the depth that you're going to have to we're going to have to see from them this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think they did the things that they felt like they had to in terms of getting guys in behind Tony Carr and Lamar Stevens. I saw a picture of Jamari Wheeler the other day in practice, and he looks like a guy. He's going to benefit from some weight room time. He's a little skinny-legged. reminds me of a young Tim Frazier to a certain extent. Trent Buttrick, the guy, you know, he's going to come in at 6'8". He's going to give you some size behind some of the more established guys. And John Haar, you know, he's 6'9". So they've got some bodies in there that are big. I think, you know, they've got all the pieces. They've got the big guys. They've got the guards. They've got the depth behind them. You know, it's just a matter of putting it all together. And for this team, I think there's no question that, you know, top to bottom, it's one of the more talented teams that we've seen in the past 10 years, just in terms of pound-for-pound talent. But, you know, some of the better Penn State teams over the years have been ones that have been able to get everybody on the same page, play consistently, and do it at a regular, you know, not only play consistently, but play consistently, to do that week in and week out, game in and game out. That's a tough ask, and I think if these guys, if Tony Carr and Lamar Stevens and these guys can, you know, take that next step, you know, Penn State's going to be in a good place, and if these guys like Jamari Wheeler and Trent Buttrick are able to, you know, help them off the bench and give them some depth and give these guys some rest, that's going to do Penn State a lot of good. Not so much in you know, October and November and what have you, but, you know, especially when you get into February and March when you've got tired legs, and the deeper your team is, the farther they can go.
Ben, always a pleasure. Appreciate the time very much.
Yep, thanks for having me, Steve.
Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. We'll come back, wrap up this quality broadcast extravaganza. I had it in that word myself. On News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Jerry Dulac is going to join us on the show tomorrow. We're going to recap the U.S. Open at Erin Hills. We'll talk about Erin Hills as a venue, how it played out, what are its chances getting back into the rota, about what Brooks Koepka did over the weekend, especially the last two rounds. Koepka's been a quality pro. He's only 27, but he's been a quality pro now. He felt he had something in him that could win a major. And he did. He won it yesterday, won it by four shots. An impressive performance. Ricky Fowler finished fifth. Again, could not generate four solid days, good days, to get himself his first major. It's interesting that it's brought up about Arnold Palmer. Fox did a great tribute to Arnold Palmer. And they were talking afterward about Palmer won the U.S. Open in 1960 at Cherry Hills outside of Denver. He was down seven shots. He came back and won. It's the largest final round comeback in the history of the U.S. Open. He took the visor and he threw it into the crowd. That was the flag on 18 was depicting the silhouette of him throwing the visor into the crowd. He said the funny thing was is that they said he won the U.S. Open. And it took all the pressure off. Now, normally you would think that that would lead to, oh, the pressure's off, and now let's see how many we can win. Right? Because, you know, you already have one. They say in some ways for him, because of the drive he had, he says it may have kept him from winning three or four because, like, he was, you know, I've won the U.S. Open. All right. Now, who knows? You'd have to pull him aside and ask him. But it's not as if Palmer did not remember certain things. A friend of mine was talking to Arnold, and he said, "Where are you from?" He said, "I'm from Penn State." He says, yeah. He says, hey, that's, he says, I love Penn State. He says, yeah. He said, didn't you win a state championship on the white course? And Palmer looks at him and goes, no, two. So the king did remember everything. Everything. But the next year it goes to the more traditional Shinnecock Hills in New York. And then...
That's iconic. You have to go. You got to go.
Yeah. Let me put it this way. I could see me doing the show. That's, of course, they still want me doing the show. At Shinnecock next year, then 2 years at Wingfoot, and 2 years after that at the Country Club in Brookline. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Francis Ouimet. That's where he won.
Yeah.
Francis Ouimet, as an amateur, won at the Country Club in Brookline. Very distinguished place. Remember, these are all grounds you and I are allowed on. Hey, this is great. It's kind of like Caddyshack. Hey, all right.
Well, yeah, you're going from Erin Hills to an iconic place next year where, yeah they're not going to let the likes of me in there for sure. But I was just surprised with so many that did not make the cut, with Rory and with Dustin, and with those fairways so wide from side to side.
Yeah. I'm wondering why they made them as wide as they did. I wasn't quite...
And with them being so wide, they just weren't hitting it well off the tee.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, let's face it, some of the biggest names in the game. I mean, Johnson didn't make the cut. McIlroy didn't make the cut. Now, McIlroy has a rib injury. Johnson's coming off his baby being born. So there's a whole bunch of outside factors with some of these guys, too, that I think a lot of people don't realize. I don't think a lot of people realize that McIlroy has a rib injury. Great to have you here.
Awesome to be here. I'll just follow you over to the Spikes game, and if you don't mind.
I thought, Matt, big step for you.
Away, Matty.
I mean,
why, thank you.
If you didn't sew up the Shikellamy job after this performance, I don't think anything will do.
We're working on it. We got a plan.
I just let the work speak for itself.
Isn't there some place we can stick the suit?
Yeah, we did in the digital media office, didn't we?
Isn't it like a digital media conference every Friday night somewhere in the country?
There's this great show we have on 10 Friday nights in a row he could co-host with.
Yeah. I mean, doesn't like Bismarck, North Dakota have a... or Butte, Montana, big digital media conference?